Please note that the views expressed on this program are those of the individuals who speak them, and not necessarily those of Portsmouth Community Radio, its Board of Trustees, members, volunteers, or underwriters. Good evening and welcome to Spirit Radio. I am your host, Willie Hassel. Along with my co-host, Lynn Nickerson, we will take you on a journey into the unknown, where the paranormal becomes the normal, a journey to a world cloaked in darkness, where reality becomes a thin veil. So sit back, relax, and join us as we venture into the shadows, the darkness, the unknown, and back. Yeah, good evening and welcome once again to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. I am your host, Willie Hassel, your gatekeeper to the dark side, your guide to the realm of the unknown, the unseen, the unthinkable. And she is the always lovely, she is the mystical, she is the mysterious, and she is here. She is Lynn Nickerson.
Good evening, Willie. How are things with you tonight?
Oh, everything is just fine with me tonight.
Dandy, good.
And you?
Well, I'm going into raccoon withdrawal. Other than that, I'm doing okay.
Raccoon withdrawal.
Yes.
I know, your little family moved out. Huh?
Yeah, we didn't even get a family photo either.
Oh, that's,
yeah.
That's too bad.
They invaded my attic.
Oh, I've been down there.
Yeah, that's no fun. But they're gone now.
They're gone now.
So I'm all alone.
Oh, gee, that's too bad.
I'm getting over it.
You're getting over it? No, okay. Well, you know, maybe some chipmunks will move in or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid
then
of.
Then you'll be all set. All right.
Bats in my belfry.
Bats in your belfry, yeah. All that fun kind of stuff. Shall I? We have people in the studio here with us.
Clearing, right?
I can see them. They're right here. So shall I introduce them?
Please do.
All right, I will do that. So tonight on Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience, it is a pleasure to welcome back to the show Reverend Betty Comerford and Reverend Steve Wilson. Betty and Steve are both shamanic healers and empaths. Betty is a third-generation medium and psychic and author of Ghosts and Shamanic Tales of True Hauntings. Steve is a spiritualist minister and teaches shamanism at his spiritual center, the Sacred Healing Grove. And together they are the authors of The Reluctant Empath, as well as their latest book, The Empath's Quest, Finding Your Destiny, which is slated to be released soon and I believe is available for pre-order on Amazon right now. And so tonight is their third appearance on Spirit Radio, and they are joining us live here in the studio. So you know what that means. That means the phone line is open. If you want to give us a call and ask a question at 603-430-9722, or you can always email questions to whassell, that's whassell, at wscafm.org. And now let us welcome to the show Reverend Betty Comerford and Reverend Steve Wilson. Good evening and welcome to Spirit Radio.
Thank you for having us again. How are you doing?
Great. We're doing great.
Yeah. I'm doing good. Excellent.
I had to think about that.
You have to be outstanding all the time, no matter what.
You have to be on all the time.
That's right.
Well, welcome back, you guys. This
Thanks.
Is your
yes.
third
welcome back, and we appreciate
we love coming here.
We appreciate you driving all the way up here to spend a little bit of time with us.
Yeah, we certainly do, because it is one heck of a drive.
I know.
I mean, it's not like it's right next door.
Well, I'll let you contemplate the universe as you're driving on the road. You know?
At least, you're not bucking the snow and the ice.
True.
No,
yeah.
This time.
That was a nice night for a ride, anyway.
It was outstanding.
It was. And the moon's still out, too. So, as mentioned, this is their third appearance. And in addition to being authors, they're also members of the Spirit Light Network. And that is a group of psychic empaths who assist in identifying souls who are still with us. But they also assist in crossing them over to the rightful place, their rightful place in the spirit world. So their first book is Ghost and Shamanic Tales of True Hauntings, which chronicles their many investigative adventures. Their second book, The Reluctant Empath, focuses on identifying empathic abilities and how to deal with them. And their third book, The Empath's Quest, is a natural step in the continuation of this topic. However, the release date for this latest book has been pushed into January of 2017. So tonight what we plan to do is to cover a couple of stories from the first book, then review some of the salient points from The Reluctant Empath, and then perhaps get into a preview of the Empath's quest.
Sounds like a plan.
Okay. So, beginning with Ghosts and Shamanic Tales of True Hauntings, I was hoping to kind of go over chapters 6 and 7. And chapter 6 has to do with the Coconut Grove and the Victorian house. Mm-hmm. And you had gone there initially to see whether or not the spirits approved of the diaries being published.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought maybe we could refresh the audience's memory on you arriving and what you felt and what you experienced once you got there. And this house, is it in New Hampshire or was it Massachusetts?
It's in New Hampshire.
New Hampshire, okay. On the coastline somewhere.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So take it away.
Have fun with that, buddy.
The woman that owned the house was the first person outside of the family to own the house, and I think the house was over 150
Correct.
Years old.
Oh, neat.
A lot of really neat stuff there that she'd, a lot of history.
A lot of history. Yeah. And she had found these old diaries, and believing in spirits and feeling the spirits of the house, she wanted to make sure that they were okay with her publishing their private diaries.
Did the original owners, though, were they aware of the diaries? I mean, why did they leave that behind?
You'd be surprised what gets left behind in old houses we've bumped into.
Was it in the attic? Or
I'm not sure.
I don't remember where she found them.
No.
Okay.
But anyway,
what a find.
It was an amazing find.
Yeah.
Amazing find. So we started walking throughout the house, and I remember standing in the foyer, and Steve was in another room, and I was with one of the other members, a woman by the name of Amy, and all of a sudden I yelped because I felt my side was on fire, and it was incredibly, incredibly painful, and it took a little while for me to kind of move that energy out.
That's kind of frightening, though.
It was very frightening because it was totally unexpected. Mm. We were talking about something entirely different, and all of a sudden I felt this pain. So the woman was very graciously, you know, she made us lunch, and we were sitting there, and, you know, Steve was telling her all that he was feeling in the house. The shoes, remember? You kept
seeing
shoes.
Oh, yeah, the old
shoes.
Minister. Yeah, there was a tie into the town. Wasn't the house also like she was the head of the historical society for the whole town?
Yes, she was.
Yeah, oh,
so,
really?
Yeah, so there was this thing coming up, and I seen this old minister, and he had this feeling about him, and that's
being stern.
Yeah, very stern, and he was trying to hide something. And that's anything about being an empath. You can get so sensitive, you can really begin to understand the emotional backdrop of someone who's on the other side.
Yeah.
And we always say that drama in life is drama in death, and it follows you. So, but this particular guy, someone was trying to give me a clue about what he was all about, and I was seeing these shoes, and then we got closer to it, and then she goes, oh my God, and she had this remembrance of somebody coming through the town who was a minister from the 1700s, and he was a pretty famous guy, but he got railroaded out for having improprieties with a lot of the women.
Mm.
And one of the big stories about him, when he was in college learning in his ministry, he got thrown out for stealing somebody's shoes.
So, you're kidding.
Yeah, so it was those kinds of things are fun, you know.
Yeah.
Catching on fire, not so much.
That was not fun.
But you were also picking up on shoes for another reason. And another historical reason too, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, back to Betty's story, and then we'll get
you have to remind me. It's been a while.
So I started telling the woman what I had felt, and her face suddenly went white, and she said, show me exactly where you were standing. So I took her back out to the foyer, and I hadn't noticed that there was a little table with a photograph, and I showed her where I was standing, and she looked at the photograph, and she said, do you know who this is? And I said, no, well, why would I know? It turned out that was a photograph of a woman that used to live in that house, and she and her husband died in the famous Copacabana fire in Boston that took place in 1947. Over 500 people, I believe, died in that fire, and they died in that fire, and I really felt that I had felt her death in that moment. Later on in the day, Amy captured an incredible EVP of a woman, very raspy voice, as if, you know, you're full of smoke and
can't talk.
And she can't talk. And that, I think that...
Followed it with her to the other side.
Yeah. Followed it with her, yeah.
And, but the voice said that there were three of them and that
they didn't want
to be cleared, right?
No, they wanted to... That was their home.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I thought they wanted to go.
It's... People ask us this question all the time. What if they don't want to go? in the process of how this works with helping so many cross over, I mean, to be stuck here in the first place, there has to be some kind of an energetic tie to here. Attachment's a better word. But it's a heaviness in the field, and empathically you feel that, and whether it be a lower emotion, a grief, a guilt, attachment to possessions.
Unfinished business.
Yeah, unfinished business. And what it really comes down to for us is we process that for them to the best of our ability, and then the next step of that is to raise and increase the vibration of the moment for the spirit. And every time we've been able to do that, we're pretty successful. Sometimes it's a little bit more work for us, and it's usually not them as much as it is us to get past that process. And I say this to people all the time, if someone on the other side could for a moment feel what that feels like to not be here, there's no way in the world they would hang around. And we've had that happen. You know, we've brought spirits to that space, like, and it's the most beautiful thing on the face of the planet. It's like pure opening of love, for lack of a better word. We don't even like calling it love anymore. It's just this very high intense vibration that makes your whole body sing, for lack of a better word.
It's whatever whatever you would think heaven is or paradise.
Nirvana. Just euphoria, huh?
Yes.
And the neat thing about that, we felt that in life a bunch of times, at different times when we've done things. And so it's henceforth the next set of books, you know, to try to explain where that's all taking us. You know?
That almost sounds like overload, constant euphoria. I don't know if I could take it.
It's, you eat too much lobster, you get used to it, and you're looking for a better, bigger lobster.
And I never get tired of lobster.
No, me neither. So what about the shoes you kept picking
I'm
up on?
I'm trying to remember now.
Well, some with buckles.
The two original owners that built the house, their business
was the shoe business.
And I'm trying to remember the story. Yeah. I believe that in Massachusetts, I think the town of Haverhill.
Mm-hmm. It was Haverhill.
Was known for shoes.
The shoe manufacturing.
They had shoe manufacturers. Yeah.
So that's probably where they made their money, right. I believe.
Yeah. It's some of that we get calls to go to some pretty intense historical places. Some we can't really talk about it for whatever reason, but that's always been the most fun for us as empathic people, as shamanic healers, you know, being that open to things, because history in itself and objects from history tend to hang on to energetic connection. Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing.
So in follow-up to this house, did you get a chance to go back and get permission about the diaries being published?
We never did. We never did go back. Which is too bad.
Darn.
Either we did a really good job or we didn't.
Yeah. Well, it would be almost worth a phone call to see if she took that step and did it. Because I just think it would be wonderful.
Yeah, that whole one was set up by somebody else that actually...
Yes, it was.
Another historian who kind of brought us there. And just a thought on that, you know, a spirit having a problem with that, that's more of a problem, because if it's like that would be an attachment to something. So it goes back to that whole thing of this energy process. If we could bring them to that place where they feel that really shouldn't matter.
Yeah, that they wouldn't care. But if they were still hanging around, I'm thinking probably
may care. You know, everybody has a little skeleton in the closet they don't want people to see. You know, on the other, especially on the other side.
Tangent on that, you were talking about raising your energy vibration, and you did the same thing in this next, on chapter 7, Something Wicked This Way Comes, that when you were out in the yard and you were trying to close up the vortex, that you had to raise your energy, and you do that a lot. How do you do that? I know that you all connect, but what is the process in raising your energy level? How do you know when you do it?
You can't help but not feel it.
You feel it.
How do you feel when you're depressed? Heavy, time's dragging, and just like not very good. How do you feel when you're in love? Light as a feather and time flies. So that it teaches you something very intrinsically about this ability we have within ourselves to switch our energetic context. And you learn that as an empath along the way, because you're constantly feeling the energies of all your surroundings. So all of a sudden you're like, oh, I got to figure out how to raise myself up beyond this lower vibration of another person or a place or a space or even a spirit. And so a lot of people do it with prayer or ritual, drumming, saging. But when you take it to the next level, you begin to have this realization within yourself that it's just an opening, a place that you felt before. And what I call it is energetic memory. And so it's a question of bringing yourself to that energetic memory of the higher vibration. people always ask me, why don't you stay there all the time? Well, life is life.
Yeah, so, yeah, you have to deal with stuff.
So when you're brought into situations, whether you'd be surprised how many times, you know, you can ask Betty, it's like all of a sudden somebody will come into our lives that is having an issue, and we don't know them from a hole in the wall, but you just all of a sudden know, oh, I have to have a very sacred experience and be present to this person. And when you do that, you have the energetic memory of that, and you shift instantly in what they need to know and what they need to hear and what they need to feel through you actually happens. And I've had that happen hundreds and hundreds of times in my life. Very beautiful moments. Some very tough, but...
So I guess it's kind of based initially on intent, is what you want to do, and then you must have some way that you trigger yourself to get there, like thinking of a pleasant memory or something.
I know how it feels, so I just go to how it feels.
You go to how it feels.
Some people do have their happy place and things like that.
Yeah, we call it the happy place. The happy place. Or you it's have like a pleasant
a trigger.
Memory.
A trigger.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, a trigger.
I like strawberry shortcake. Bam!
I'm there.
Yeah, something in your life that made you so happy in that moment.
Mm.
It's like music. You know, a song will trigger a memory. Yeah. And right then you're back
there.
In that moment. And that's pretty much what he's talking about, you know, to get you to that level.
Okay.
And the wonderful thing about that is that when you get into that level and your energy does rise and your vibration rises, you are giving permission to the person that's with you to be authentic, to be themselves, because that's what the energy does.
Mm.
You're holding space for
them. Holding space for them. So now they can start their journey of self-discovery.
Okay. Thank you for that.
No problem.
So getting on to chapter 7, Something Wicked This Way Comes. That was quite a trying adventure. This Judy woman, she moved into this house. She'd lived there for 3 months, and she had nothing but disaster, and she got depressed. Her kids felt it. And then she discovered that someone had, well, not cursed her, but certainly gave her the evil eye, but had a charm. So I wanted to touch on what it was you felt when you first approached the place, because you definitely had a physical reaction to that area. So if you take it from there.
Well, a lot of this, what we talk about and the practice of what you have to really learn with yourself to be able to do these kinds of things, you have to know where you begin and where you end, okay? And we all have our moments in our days where something's going on or something's happening and you feel yourself switch and you go back and forth. But when you get to this place where you know where you begin and you end, something is allowed to happen with you. And what we call that is the difference, for lack of a better word. So you're walking around and you have your container of where you went. So when something different comes in, it's like a shutter to your system.
Okay?
Now, most people are just like walking around oblivious to that. But that sensitivity is really awesome to be able to develop. So and people, well, how can you do that all day? I was like, I don't know any other way to be, because I want to know if something's going to happen. So walking into that place in a space, being totally unconditional, no judgment about it whatsoever, holding where I'm at and allowing whatever is there to come in, if it doesn't feel good, I'm going to know pretty quick. And so it tends to physically feel like a very staticky experience coming into you, a cold experience coming into you. It can be an emotional lower, like sadness or anger coming into you.
What about the tightening of the chest?
We also get the pain in the chest. It's like oil and vinegar.
Yeah.
It's like a lower vibration coming into a higher vibration. And for me, personally, it's like a pain in my chest, tightening of my stomach.
Willie and I were just on an investigation a couple of weeks ago. And when we approached the doorway to this house, I got that. It was like,
yep.
Fun, huh?
Yeah, constriction. And then I had difficulty breathing.
Yeah.
So I know exactly what you're talking about. And as I walked through the house, I just kept deep breathing to try and get rid of that feeling. And it did dissipate. It did go away. Very fortunately. Now, you mentioned that Amy had a dream before going to this investigation, as well as yourself, right, Steve? Mm-hmm. So Amy saw some kind of dark entity coming up out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
This is Amy is one of the team members of Spirit Light Network. And she said that it was a dark thing, and she said it started snowing, and then she and her daughter, or she and another person, started throwing snowballs at this entity.
Mm-hmm. She and the children.
And it slithered back into the ground, but it said, we're not done yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was your dream, Steve?
No, I'm trying to remember.
I'm trying to remember the story.
It's been so long. I think it was more about the person who started the process. Somebody was attached or had a problem with the person that moved into the house.
Oh, and also you mentioned you thought something was buried in the ground. Yeah. That's what it was. But I didn't recall the dream.
Yeah, a lot.
Wasn't specific.
A lot of times, this is a neat thing about the group when we first started it. We made this rule where we weren't allowed to like research, and nobody was supposed to tell us what was going on until we got there.
I think that's a good idea.
And we called it Blue's Clues, for lack of a better word. So all of a sudden, as we got going with it, some of us would get dreams or little hits about this just to pay attention. If I remember correctly, the hit back then for that one was actually someone that I knew out in the community had an issue with the particular person at the house. I didn't know the particular, so when we got there and we started having the discussions about who they hang around with, their community, any kind of religious affiliations or lack of thereof, and all of a sudden, click, you've been hanging around, there's the dream. All right, so there's some kind of an issue somebody's having with somebody. I studied a lot of the occult growing up. I had to because of my empathic thing and
Until you learn it and get it all in context.
Yeah, it's a feeling experience. It's what is the energy of it?
Yeah.
You know?
And a lot of it has to do with intent. Yeah. So anyway, the property had originally been owned by one of the judges from the witchcraft trials, 1692 and 1693.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you picked up on that, didn't you, Betty?
I had a vision of the Salem judge, and I'm thinking, why am I seeing one of the judges from the Salem witch trials? This is bizarre. And I just kind of filed it away until
I had to go there. I like to jump in the mud.
that is so interesting to get it, verified like that.
Actually, wasn't one of your ancestors?
Yeah, they're like an ancestor down there too. So the plot thickens.
The plot thickens. One of his ancestors, I think, was one of the judges.
Oh, very cool. So you went through the house and then Amy went down into the basement, into the young girl's bedroom,
mm-hmm.
and she felt this ball of energy over the bed, and you felt that as well?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So what is that kind of like? Just like a static?
Very static.
Field of energy?
Staticky, heavy, cold. It's a different thing. It's like if you're walking along, and all of a sudden you walk through a swarm of mosquitoes, it's going to get your attention, but they tend to be colder because high vibration has a warmth to it, the static kinetic energy moving, so in anything that's kind of heavy and I'm going to say dark, I don't get into evil, but just a lesser vibration, there's less movement in the energy, so it tends to be cold. It's quantum physics.
But what exactly was that? Was it an entity? Was it a vortex?
If I remember correctly, that one was more of like a ball of energy that
just
was kind of hanging out there, then it was opening up a space.
It was above the girl's bed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which happens a lot.
Does it?
A wicked lot. And there are, we've run into things out there that do store negative energy or kind of perpetuate a process in a home or in an area where they'll make it happen as a food source, for lack of a better word. There's actually a name for the deity, but.
Okay, a food source. This kind of like an invisible orb, almost?
Yeah, some of us can see them.
Could you?
Yeah, some places we've been able to see them.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness, that's interesting. Okay, so you walked outside, and there was a rock, and now David, a member of your team,
correct.
He was, kind of like, sensing the vibration of the rock and said the rock was okay, but something around it was not okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Something around it was negative. So you finally discovered a section where you thought maybe something had been buried, and then she admitted that there had been a charm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, gives me the creeps just thinking about it.
Actually, in the book, there's a photograph.
Of
one
the energy.
Of the, one of the girls
the energy
got
coming out of the charm.
Oh, that thing?
That thing coming up out of the ground.
Yeah,
that was pretty
creepy. Really creepy.
I think it's fun.
I mean, it was fun. It's creepy fun.
Did you ever dig it up or did you just neutralize it?
We neutralized it.
Neutralized it.
Okay. Because we would have been all night there trying to dig up this tiny little charm, but we were able to zero in on the energy of it and the intention of it.
Little. Okay.
It's that kind of thing. I mean, curses and evil eye, whatever.
Well,
it
all has to do with intent.
Yeah, it's all intent. It's not, I mean, nobody really wants to use their energy to make somebody do something. They want to get them to use their own energy to do something. So the intent always comes from a lower place where you throw yourself into a state of fear. The next thing you know, your imagination's running wild and your feelings running wild. So you're becoming your own worst enemy. And that's most of the time how that kind of thing
And you're
works.
Feeding that intention.
Yeah. And it's no different than a spirit that's hanging around who's a jerk. You know?
Yeah, but that seemed to be really powerful and had quite an impact on her whole family.
It did.
Yeah. It went after us for a little bit while after that.
Yeah, so, I was going to follow it up with that. That was kind of concerning.
I've done a lot of that kind of work over the years, and a lot of times when you get in the middle of something, they don't like when you interfere.
When you interfere.
Yeah, so. But, yeah.
So did you have any dreams after that, Betty?
I think I did. Mm-hmm. Some dark dreams. But we've learned we just don't give it any energy. It's like, whatever.
And you were kind of like plagued with this energy for a while, right? Yeah,
to go right? To get
you
it
were
down.
Cold.
A lot... You have to go through this. The thinking is, or the knowing of it all is, if
you just kind of ignore it.
You ignore it because if you attack it, now you've become a worthy opponent, and it goes back and forth, you know.
Yes.
And so in that, you know, you're just feeding the system that will continue on and on and on.
You said something really interesting at the end of that magic. If you do magic
given is magic owed.
Is magic owed. Would you like to expound on that a little bit? Because I don't think everybody realizes kids that get into witchcraft and whatnot, they don't understand the power of it and they don't give it the respect it deserves.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's got to do with manifestation. In the shamanic thought process, actually it's a big part of the next book that's coming out.
Good.
We all have this ability because we have to manifest our reality, okay? And the manifestation of our reality always comes from a place of lack and fear because if you had it, you wouldn't want to manifest it. So,
Well, you can make things better, though.
most people make things better. And this is the weird thing that I've noticed along my life. I'd be amazed how many things I've made happen and better.
Yeah.
And you get there, it's like, ugh, it didn't turn out so good. And it turns into a big lesson. And so this thinking came up about, well, what are we supposed to really have? And maybe we don't really know. So what we do is when we're manifesting, we do something called situational manifestation, where it's a tool for the next progress for our evolution.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
So a lot of that lesser kind of thing of manifesting charms and needs and great jobs and boyfriends and girlfriends and all those kinds of things is coming from a lack place. And we're getting stronger and stronger and stronger as human beings. We're seeing it happen more and more out there. And so playing around comes from the earthly part of energy. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If you're doing your destiny, you're kind of grabbing from a very high frequency. And when you're in that place, it just happens automatically.
Yeah.
It's like I tell people all the time, it's like, my life is amazing. And I was homeless for a long time, but my life was amazing. And I had to get into this bandwagon of just finding my destiny. But when I was doing that lower stuff down there, trying to make things happen, if I was taking energies from the earth, I had to have some kind of respect to it. And what it comes down to is duality, have and have not. And there was always a payment that had to be given. And I've had some pretty over-the-top creepy things happen along the way where I got tricked into making things happen, and next thing you know, somebody's coming for payment, and it wasn't fun.
Yeah,
you know, I'm actually being very vague about that, but you know,
maybe you can tell me more later.
I don't want some things I don't want to throw out there.
Well, we're at the bottom of the hour, so we're going to have to take a break. We're talking to Betty Comerford and Steve Wilson, and their latest book is The Empath's Quest, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. So don't go away. Supernatural Magazine, the UK's newest paranormal magazine, provides support to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience. It is the magazine's goal to bring every aspect of supernatural news and research from around the world under one roof to create a universal platform for all those interested in the supernatural. More information is available at supernaturalmagazine.com. You are listening to Spirit Radio, the paranormal experience on WSCA 106.1 FM, and we'll be right back after this short break.
WSCA 106.1 FM in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And from the community calendar, the Orchard Street Chop Shop hosts open mic night every Monday night starting at 6 p.m. from now until May 9th. Hosted by Kahari Rose and Dennis, the facility offers everything you would need from a baby grand piano, amps, mics, and mic stands, cords, and even drums. To learn more about this fun event, their website is orchardstreetchopshop.com or give them a call at 603-749-0006. And this one is rather fitting. The Seacoast Repertory Theater and Let's Be Real will kick off the 2016 Red Light series by showing the film Purple Rain on Wednesday, April 27th. The 1984 cult musical stars Prince as the Kid, a Minneapolis frontman for his band, The Revolution. At the height of their career, his quest to find the perfect song and girlfriend, as well as his struggles with his family. Purple Rain features performances by Prince and The Revolution, Morris Day and The Time, and Apollonia 6. Showtime is 7:30 p.m. Further information about this event can be found on their website at seacoastrep.org or give them a call at 603-433-4793. And some guests?
Yes, the upcoming guest list starts with April 30th. And our beloved Lighthouse historian, Jeremy D'Entremont, is going to be joining us once again. And he's going to wrap up the tales and histories of his West Coast Lighthouse tour that he took a couple of months ago. May 7th, Joni Mahan is coming back as a returning guest. She's written about the hauntings of Victorian Mansion in Gardner, Mass. And now she has a new release titled Devil's Toy Box. May 14th, we have a new topic to explore in Spirit Radio that would be, that you could call your Bigfoot or Sasquatch. Kelly and Kawani Lapersidis will be our guests, and they have extensive encounters with both ETs and Sasquatch. Kawani, who is an author of two books on the subject, has done extensive research over the past 40 years, and his wife Kelly is an empath, and she too has had many communications with Sasquatch. So this will be a different show. May 21st, we're welcoming Michelle Matuzas, and she has a new tarot deck out, which is finally ready for release. And Michelle is a psychic medium empath who is also an historic reenactor and a member of the Spirit Light Network and a very good friend of our two guests tonight. And in addition, she's also an artist, and she's releasing this deck of tarot cards, all of which display her artwork, so we'll be talking to her about that. May 28th, the subject of our show this night has a new twist. The Border Patrol, which monitors illegal aliens coming in to the United States from Mexico, this will be the subject of our guest this night. His name is Rocky Elmore, and he is a retired U.S. Border Patrol agent who has many paranormal stories to tell us from his book, Out on Foot. And that wraps up our guest list.
All right, so let's go back to our guests in the studio tonight, Reverend Betty Comerford and Reverend Steve Wilson. Welcome back.
Welcome back.
We're still here.
Yes, still here.
They're here. So, in talking about empathic abilities and so forth, there's one thing that is often done, and that's cord cutting. Mm-hmm. So you had also done that at the end of this adventure with this Judy. Mm-hmm. So I think talking about cord cutting is really important because some people just get their energy gets zapped, mm-hmm. and unwittingly so. So maybe you'd like to talk about maybe how you handle Judy and what others can do.
Yep. So a basic teaching of that is every person in this world has a vibration. Every person is either higher or lower than the one they're coming in contact with. And so in that interaction of the relationship, when you come together with them, what happens is a cord, an energetic cord, is attached between the two. And it sounds kind of creepy, but we see it all day long. And what that does is the person that has a lower vibration is actually siphoning off the person of the other higher vibration. There is some malice sometimes in some people where they actually do that on purpose. There's actually some Asian arts where they do that in,
really?
For fighting. And it's actually a big occult thing, too.
Is that sort of connection always made when you meet somebody?
I say yes, because I've experienced it my entire life with everybody I come in contact with. They tend to dissolve if you're coming from a place that's very authentic. If you're not authentic and you're having, like, you leave the person's space and, like, you know, and you start thinking about this and thinking about that, the cord will actually continue to animate on its own between the two of you. And you have to be sensitive enough to realize that. So the next part of the process is, if you want it to be cut, it's a visualization. What we do is we take our hands, and we actually usually run the abdomen or the solar plexus. It can be lower too, but you run your hands over a couple inches off your body. And you can actually feel where it is. You'll feel a difference in energy. That's
really
And if you're sensitive, and when you feel that, you just grab onto it and you close your eyes. And I always say, just who's the first person's face that pops into your head? And like, oh my God, I was just hanging out with that person or whatever. I'm thinking about them all the time for some reason. So the connection can be so intense sometimes that what they're thinking can actually be transmitted through it, and all of a sudden you're having random thoughts. You see it in relationships, especially break up.
Well, I was going to mention love situations where you want to cut the cord.
Yeah, and there's a little weird, neat thing about that. Like, a lot of times, like, you're trying to do the best thing and, like, let somebody down easy, and that doesn't always work. And then all of a sudden you get to a place where you're actually moving on and letting go. And I always tell people, the second you really let go, I guarantee the other person knows it and starts calling you or trying to track you down because they're not getting your energy anymore. See it over and over and over again. So it just perpetuates that teaching that we're so interconnected, that we're all feeding off each other energetically.
Well, you had done something with a symbol on her stomach.
Yep.
And is that a symbol that is assigned to you when you study shamanism?
They kind of come in organically because there's so many of them. Mm. Like, in, we do healing work. You know, our job is to be as open, what we call the hollow bone, for lack of a better word, so that whatever needs to come in is actually for the person. If you get in the way, you can kind of muck up the process, you know, with your ego and whatever you believe the teachings to be. So it's really being so open and so present so that what they need is there. I see them. I always have for some reason. I call it sacred.
You see the symbols yourself?
I call it sacred geometry, and everybody has one.
Do you choose just one?
It all depends what the process is. You know?
So it may change depending on the individual.
Well, it's funny because it gets into the next book. I have seen my entire life symbols in people's auric field.
Really?
Yeah, and the neat thing is I got to this place where I could actually see this other thing called the matrix around people. It was almost like this chicken wire around you that glowed in the dark.
Really?
It was either silver or gold. And on that chicken wire, these symbols were attached to it. And we call it the matrix instead of chicken wire. It's kind of
matrix sounds cooler.
Yeah, it sounds cooler. So anyway, so learning, I got taught this along the way and throughout my life. And what it came down to was that the matrix or the chicken wire, it reacts to where your energy system is, okay? How far you've progressed and evolved in being open to this pure energy that comes into us all day long. Most people don't do that. Most people have judgments and untruths and beliefs within themselves, or hurts or angers or whatever, that actually dumbs down your vibration. So that matrix that is at a very low space. So the geometries on that matrix, okay, they're beautiful figures. They're like Christmas tree bulbs, for lack of a better word. And so I all of a sudden one day saw in this person I was working with, their matrix started to glow a little brighter, and it's almost like it glowed to this point where it connected with one of those geometries, and it exploded all through the person's space, and they were having this ecstatic experience, like, oh my God, what just happened? And it's like, I don't know, but that was cool. And so being a curious kind of chap, and I like to experience energies, I started to push the envelope of that, and the teachings got stronger and stronger. And what it did is it taught me what life is all about. For it's and so there's other things you started to see too is within the energy system. After I learned that part, was something I called unsacred geometries, which were actually created by the human individual, and I always look like a big black piece of coal. Yeah. And that's from our intent. That's in a moment. It's like a filter.
Isn't that sort of synonymous with like the crystalline structure of water, that good intent is
same
changed?
Idea.
It's the and same idea then, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's us.
It's the energy moving through it and how it manifests in the, well, not the chemical makeup, but maybe it is a chemical makeup. Certainly the structure of the molecule.
Well, the chemical part is actually the problem with most people. There's a place where a lot of us are evolving up past the chemical experience. And that has to do with the energy part of it. And that's where the matrix and the sacred geometry begins to change.
But there are forms that show up. So that's really what I'm getting at.
Yep.
Is that, yeah.
Yeah.
The structural change in it.
You know, we're made out of water.
That's true.
And we're full of chemicals.
And so you sometimes see in that haze around the person, it starts taking on like swirling structures. Is that it?
And it all comes down to where the person's at. You know, in their life, you know, if somebody's sad, their energy or their color changes. You know, we were playing around with changing our auric fields all the time. Oh, I can change the room of color to gold or yellow or blue just by intention.
Well, I want to touch on, you know, your first book, The Reluctant Empath. It helps a person establish whether or not they are empathic.
The second one. Second book.
I meant the second book. Yes, the second book. And how to deal with that, identifying and then how to deal with it. How is it that the third book, The Empath's Quest, how is that a continuation of what you've established in the second book?
Well, it's the same character, Alex, and they're all true stories.
Okay.
And basically, the Reluctant Empath was kind of a setup to show people that there's something to this empathy or empathic thing that we're talking about. And so what the next book takes it into is why. Mm-hmm. You know, what is this empathic thing? What does it serve a purpose, or is it this giant curse that we're all you want to get out of? I don't want to feel things, and you know, and that's very prevalent out there. You know,
yeah, just want to turn it off.
Yeah, how do I turn this off? I hear this all. I don't want to be this, and people call us all the time, or we see blogs on it. You know, how do you make this
yourself?
Go away? You know, and to me, and I was that person when I was younger, but for whatever reason. Something made a different click within me, and it's like, okay, I have to survive. How do I survive being this sensitive to everything around me? And here we go. And that's where the third book starts. It starts to show you the gift of this sensitivity and what it teaches you and how it takes you to a place ecstatically, vibrationally wise, that you cannot feel in everyday life from the typical human kind of paradigm of who we think we are.
You had mentioned, you know, delving into your timeline and understanding that. Was that in reference to past lives as well, or memory of past lives and your progression along?
Big part of it, really big part of it. And that was another teaching tool, you know. So how come, you know, all of a sudden I feel like my life is stuck and all of a sudden I have this ecstatic experience of retrieving some part of myself from a past life, having visions of it, the feeling of it, and a lot of that sacred geometry process of it, and my vibration would shoot through the roof, and all of a sudden my life would change, and everything was okay, and I'd move forward. And that started happening a lot. And I was like, okay, there's something to this. And I had to grab onto it tooth
and
nail.
How very enlightening.
And it's so simple, you know?
Well, it may be simple in principle, but I don't think it's simple getting there. I think it takes work.
It takes a lot of courage. And the courage is being okay with being okay and making peace with the process. Because there is a process. It's not just willy-nilly. It's not, you know, this is not fair. I got this deal. This person got that deal. And the more I started to look into it, all the religious texts since the beginning of time kind of taught this timeline thing, or this is who we really are. It's like, let's have at it.
We're all on a path.
Yeah, we all are.
Yeah, and it's not just this lifetime. How about you, Betty? What have you experienced along those lines? Like putting together maybe what you perceive to be your past lives and how it applies to now in your progression?
Writing.
My writing, exactly. Yeah. You know, I came from an immigrant family. Nobody wrote. And now all of a sudden I have this gift of writing, and it's something that I've wanted to do my whole life. And it all came together. And putting together this third book about the timeline, it was interesting because I had had so many opportunities to be published in fiction.
Really?
I won contests. I met with agents and editors, and right at the last minute, it would all fall apart.
Really?
But that was part of my timeline. It wasn't meant to happen at that moment.
And to take perhaps a different approach.
Exactly.
Making it nonfiction.
And she met me.
And I'll tell you, this book changed my life. I mean, I wrote it,
and it changed my life.
It really did.
How so?
Because it made me realize that what somebody might think of as a failure, because something that they really wanted didn't happen.
It was a way of showing you something.
It's a way of showing you perhaps that there's something else for you. For example, we use Alex, mm-hmm. Alex Empath. He wanted to be a rock star. And that's what he worked towards it, and he came so close, and it fell apart. But all those years of wanting to be a rock star and being on the stage gave him the courage to speak in front of people and to articulate. Mm-hmm. That never would have happened.
Yeah.
If he hadn't had this rock star.
There's still that disappointment that you've got to get over, though, in setting that
aside. You have
aside.
To get over it. It's like it's the whole rock star thing. It's like...
We have Elle on the line with you.
Oh. Okay.
Hello.
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 Hi.
Hi there.
Hey. My name's Al. I worked with Willie on a few cases.
Awesome.
Okay, great.
And I was curious... How do you, when you're first starting out with being an empath, how do you deal with this?
Good question. There's a lot of teachings on the element of water, a lot of teachings on the chakra system, but all these teachings all go to this ability to be able to let this energy flow through you. We call it transparency. And the basic premise is if there's no fear within you, then the energies that are coming towards you have nothing to stick to. Fear, anger, any of those kinds of emotions create densities within your space, within your body. And so when these outside entities, energies, whatever come towards you, that's what they're looking for. I look at everything as a food source. our planet's designed to be eaten. You know, that's energy, you know? And so if I'm not a food source for some of these things, guess what?
They're going to go away.
Until you get to the place where we do this next thing called flypaper, where they stick to you and you have to deal with them whether you like it or not. But that's the service part of it. So to answer your question, it's a lot of training as far as when you start to sense an energy coming to you, not reacting to it. If you react to it, you're actually using your own energy to make it more intense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, in a way, because when I'm at work,
mm-hmm.
okay, when something's happening at work, I can sense it and I know what's happening.
That's awesome. Probably don't think so.
I just...
Yeah. You ever heard of something called grounding?
As a sensitive or anything like that.
Yeah, you ever heard of something called grounding before? Or the process of grounding?
Just what I read from Michelle Bellinger's book.
So the thought process of grounding is something that has to do with the chakra system, but it also has something to do with the element of water. And emotionally... how we work is chemicals in our body. So what we do in shamanism, instead of the energies that come to us keying into the chemicals in our body, we catch the energy first and we ground them out. And that sounds kind of weird, but you can actually feel your feet tingle when it happens. So there's some different things. There's a process we call the red ball, where you actually see a red ball under your feet, about a foot under the ground. And the energy, when you bring that up into your abdomen, it'll actually catch the energies and put it out. But think about it this way. When you were being gestated in your mom's womb, what was she doing? She was eating plants and animals and taking minerals in. And all that energy, all those things of the earth went into making your body so that your soul can come in and have a vehicle to ride around and have this great time here. And so in that means your body has a connection to everything. Every element in the earth. And when you remember that, whatever happens to you energetically coming toward you is just going to flow right through. The only time it stops is when we begin to get into like a judgment of the experience. And I know it gets uncomfortable because I've been there, but I felt things that are so over the top. And I'm like, yeah, cool. This is just a neat experience. I don't give it any job to do, and it just flows through me. And it's a little bit of a practice, and there are some visualizations. Some people use tree roots to ground out, but think about a tree. You know, trees take in our carbon dioxide all day long and make oxygen for us, you know, and then they filter our water. They take the water up from the earth and bring it up to the trunk and do all their kind of cool stuff with that. But the cool thing is, like, I look at maple trees. They make syrup for us, the sweetness, because they don't judge the experience. They like being trees.
I always felt like I was thrice blessed.
Mm-hmm. You are.
I felt like I was blessed by God,
mm-hmm.
by nature,
yep.
and by man.
I believe everybody is, but some of us are a little bit ahead of the curve, so you're probably in that perspective.
When I walk into a place, I feel...
You feel the intention of whatever was left behind, that the intention tagged with the energy. The intention is what screws up the energy if you're feeling and it doesn't feel good. So you have to separate them. And the way that works is you ground out the energy and the intention just goes away. You may have a sense of what the intention that was tagged to the energy was, but it's not important. People do dumb things all day long, and they have been doing them for thousands of years and will continue to be kind of foolish. You know?
Okay,
so you just have to learn how to survive.
Okay, Al, thank you very much for the call, but unfortunately we are running out of time.
I'm sorry, Willie.
No, that's fine.
No worries.
Thank you for calling. And,
good question.
And thank you for the call, and hopefully I'll see you on an investigation somewhere pretty soon.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure, because we got one coming up pretty soon. So.
All right. Okay, Al.
Thank you, Al.
Thanks, Willie. And
have a good night.
Okay,
night.
Thanks. You too.
Okay, so we are out of time. So.
Completely?
Well,
here.
Essentially,
so fast.
Essentially, yes.
It does go by fast. Okay, I guess I'll have to ask you next time.
That's all right.
Well, the book's available for pre-order on Amazon. It's called The Empath's Quest, yep. Finding Your Destiny.
And The Reluctant Empath is out there, and it teaches you all this really cool,
and
crazy
stuff.
And
it's in its second edition.
Yep.
Oh,
it's sold
excellent.
Out the first edition, so cool.
Boy, that's wonderful.
All right.
Well,
and,
thank you both for
thank you again.
Thank you.
And people can get the book on Amazon, right?
On Amazon,
correct.
Yes.
Anywhere else?
Barnes & Noble, they actually can order it on Walmart.
Oh, that's right.
I knew,
Walmart. Yeah.
We knew we were somebody when we could order our book on Walmart.
That's right. That's right.
We made the big time.
You want to give out any websites?
TheSacredHealingGrove.com is one. And
CommerfordWilson.com is our website as writers.
Yep, and the paranormal stuff is all under the guise of
SpiritLightNetwork.net.
Correct.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Betty and Steve.
It's been
a pleasure having you again. All right. Well, that is Spirit Radio, The Paranormal Experience. And I believe Craig Mosier is coming right up with the Graveyard Shift.
He should be. And thank you, everyone, for listening, and have a good night.
In this one of many possible worlds, all for the best, or some bizarre test. Yeah.